work is now, which it has always been, but work is a thing that you do, not a place that you go. And I think in many ways, as people become more comfortable with that idea and with that reality, it makes it easier to get gigs.
Hey friend, it's David Dubinsky here in Brooklyn. So excited for this podcast episode with Diane Mulcahy. Diane is the author of The Gig Economy. Before it was even a thing, Diane created the first course in the country on the gig economy and teaches in the MBA program at Babson College. Out of that course grew the book, which is a best-selling book on Amazon, has been translated into 5 languages and featured widely in national media. I read the book in advance of this podcast episode and highly recommend it. Diane works independently in the gig economy as a consultant and advisor to Fortune 500 and startup company clients. She is a speaker, a writer, and a professor, as I mentioned. In this episode, you'll learn about actionable takeaways from her book, what Diane is seeing real time as it relates to the work world that we're living in right now, how to create inbound marketing and leads through content, how to balance working as a freelancer, contract worker, and also growing your personal work, and so much more. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Diane. Diane, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I was reading your book, The Gig Economy, and one quote that I kind of want to start off with was actually a quote from Robin Chase that said, "My father had one job in his lifetime. I will have 6 jobs in my lifetime, and my children will have 6 jobs at the same time." I was curious to hear your thoughts about that quote, why I included it in the book, and how you think about it now.
One of the reasons that I wanted to include that quote in the book was to highlight how quickly our workforce and workplace has transformed. The idea that it went from generation to generation, and there were enormous changes in the way that she describes people working, I thought was really illustrative of what we're seeing in terms of the development of the gig economy. So we know the generation that worked for one job over their whole career. And we know the generation that is likely to have or that is having multiple jobs over the course of their career. And I think the generation that will have many gigs at the same time is also here, although that's still emerging.
And so it's emerging. Do you think that that is kind of a function of it's up to people to you know, take action and make that happen? Do you think it's, and that's on a, call it, you know, at their own choosing, or do you think it's a combination of, call it, the work environment and the work marketplace?
I think ultimately it's a combination. People have to be interested in working independently and having a portfolio of work instead of a full-time job. We've definitely seen that trend emerge. So there's been an increase in the number of people who are working independently, who are self-employed, who are taking on gigs. So we've seen that trend. We also need to see companies that are willing to offer the opportunity to work that way. In other words, not in a full-time job. We are increasingly seeing that. That's been a little bit slower to develop. Companies are more conservative beings. So it's been a slower process to ask firms to change the way that they organize their work and hire talent, but we are seeing that. And then finally, technology has had a role to play in facilitating this marketplace and removing a lot of the friction and the inefficiencies that used to make it really difficult to match people who wanted projects and gigs to people who had them. So technology has gone a long way in making this a realistic choice. So I think it's all those factors combined have come together at a moment in time to change the way that we work.
Mm-hmm. The point about technology that you mentioned there was really interesting. I listened to Naval Ravikant on Joe Rogan's podcast. I think it was in 2019. And he kind of talked about in call it 5 to 10 years or some time period in the future that high quality knowledge work will be available to people in the sense that they'll be able to open up their phone, open up an app, and, you know, work on a project similar to hailing an Uber. Given that you've, you know, been a pioneer in the gig economy and wrote a book titled The Gig Economy, how do you think about that kind of observation? Are you seeing things like that emerge? And if that is the case, what do you think people could do to position themselves for that future?
Well, we are already seeing work on an app. There are plenty of both startup and established companies that make it very easy to go onto your computer or onto your mobile phone and look for work. Uber is one, Upwork is another, TaskRabbit is another. And there are also many platforms for skilled labor that offer that same kind of opportunity. There are websites that allow you to go online and contribute just a few moments of expertise to a project, as well as those where you can go on and find projects that are several months in duration. So it really varies. So I definitely think that that vision is already here. It will continue to evolve and develop, but it's already here.
Speaking of about that, that app that does have, you know, multiple month projects, is there a certain, you know, platform or website that you think does a really good job of someone says, you know what, I'm working my 9 to 5, but I'd like to work on a 2 month, 3 month project around, let's just say, leadership development or skill development or mentoring a group of rising leaders that are just a couple steps behind where I'm at. Is there any, you know, resources or websites or apps that you think are doing a really good job?
I think what we're seeing currently is the platform marketplace has split into two kind of distinct segments. One is general marketplaces where you can find a variety of work. So I would include Upwork in that category. I would include Fiverr in that category. You can go on and get any number of writing projects, data projects, coding, spreadsheet, translation, copy editing. I mean, just a wide variety of knowledge-based products. On the other end of the spectrum are platforms that are really targeting a niche. And I would say those platforms, one or more has emerged for most industries or sectors. So there are platforms for medical personnel to go online and find work, including shift work. There are platforms for MBA ex-consultants to go online and find projects of varying lengths. There's platforms for lawyers, for accountants, for graphic designers. So I think for somebody who is in a full-time role and wants to start experimenting with a side gig, you know, one way to go is tapping your existing network, talking to companies that you've worked with previously, you know, using kind of the old-fashioned approach to finding work through your network. But another way is to go onto these platforms and start building a body of work and a reputation that allows you to experiment, to work with different clients, to play with different price points and different service offerings and see what gains traction. It really gives you access to a marketplace to experiment.
Cool. Yeah. And then what I heard you talk about was, you know, going back to prior companies, going back to your network, and it seems like, you know, showcasing your work, showcasing your skills, things you're learning and stuff is a good way to position yourself for additional opportunities that, you know, you attract
because of who you are and what you've done?
Yeah, I think the way to position yourself honestly is authentically. And I've just seen that across platforms. You know, it's pretty convincing and genuine and trustworthy to hear somebody say, you know, I work in a financial services firm all day, but my passion is interior design. I've been, you know, when I was a kid, I rearranged my room and redecorated it every year. Like, it's authentic to hear those kinds of stories. And I think it resonates with people. People understand, you know, I do this kind of work during the day for whatever reason. I have a degree in it. I have a longstanding role in this company. I'm talented at it. But my passion, the thing that lights me up, the thing I care about, the thing I'm not ready to transition to full time, but I'm interested in making a part of my life, is this other thing. So I think just being really honest about whatever it is that you do, and that's, I think, acknowledging what your expertise is and then what you're trying to do. I think it's equally valid to say, look, I work for a big four accounting firm during the day, but really what I want to do is help small businesses with their books. And I want to start building a client base and work with entrepreneurs and small businesses. That's what makes me feel really good about applying my skills. And I think all of those stories just make you seem approachable, accessible, honest, genuine. And I think that that's appealing for getting work. And I think that's a more successful way to go than, you know, trying to make up some story. And in terms of positioning, one of the advantages about technology, about so many things going digital, is that it's so much easier to come up the learning curve in an area that we're interested in. So if I am that person who works in a financial services firm by day, but loves interior design, of course I can go on and start building a client base and experimenting with that online, but I can also take courses, often at no cost, on my own schedule, on demand, about the principles of interior design, about the fundamentals, about starting a business, about figuring out how to price for a service. I can get online certificates in that area. So there are so many ways for us to reinvent ourselves and reposition ourselves based on our interests that change over time, thanks to these opportunities online to learn for free and on our own schedule.
Yeah. And so what I'm hearing here is around this idea around like lifelong learning. And also in the book, there was a really great idea around kind of permanent career campaign, in the sense of kind of always being open, always be thinking about campaigning for new work, for new clients, for the next job. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that, Diane?
Yes. And I actually pulled that from an HBR article that Dori Clark wrote. And she was a former political operative, which is why I think she coined the term campaign. But the point of it is that, unlike, you know, the person who held one full-time job for their entire career, now, because we're either changing jobs or putting together a portfolio of work, we always have to be assuming that a change is coming, and we always have to be preparing for that change. And so what that means is making sure that our skills are up to speed, monitoring what the market is looking for in terms of skills, expertise, and experience, making sure our network is up to date and that we're doing things that expand our network into areas that we think we might be interested in. So all of those things just become a part of our working life. They're no longer something that we do occasionally when we're either forced to make a change in our jobs or we want to make a change. It's just something that you do on a continuous basis, like team building skills. You're just, you know, building your brand, building your network, building your skills. It's an ongoing task because you never know. The work world now is so dynamic. You just never know when you'll be in a position to have to call upon your skills and experience to make a change or to create a new opportunity. So they just need to be up to date all the time.
Yeah, got it. What other kind of, you touched upon kind of the environment that we're in right now. Like, how do you kind of think about the gig economy, and how do you think about, how do you think that this COVID and pandemic and, you know, now you see large tech companies talking about working from home and hybrid. How do you kind of think about that for people that are, you know, trying to build out their portfolio careers? Like, is it harder? Is it easier? How do you think about that?
I think in many ways it's become easier because we've seen such an abrupt and complete removal of work from an office. So there's now been this, the idea of work as a place, as an office that you go to every day, all day during the week, has been disconnected. Work is now, which it has always been, but work is a thing that you do, not a place that you go. And I think in many ways, as people become more comfortable with that idea and with that reality, it makes it easier to get gigs, because companies that were resistant to hiring people independently because they weren't on site, or because they didn't work full time, or because they couldn't come into the office and be part of the team, they've had to adjust to all of those things. They've had to adjust to working with people remotely, to not being able to see them, certainly not being able to see them regularly all day, every day. And I think those new habits, and they really are habits because it's been going on for over a year and there's no end in sight. So by the time it even becomes possible to go back to an office, the way that we're working right now will be the new norm, and it will be the status quo. And it will be very hard to move on from that. I mean, it's hard to justify going back to the way things were. So I think what will happen is there will be a hybrid model. People will have much more flexibility about how, when, and where they work. Companies will have adapted. They have the tools, the processes, and the management in place that can handle that. And that makes it easier for people to work independently. You can access companies nationally, globally, and companies are going to be more comfortable. I think many companies are excited about the idea that they can access a wider talent pool. They're no longer constrained by their local labor market. And it also allows them to access maybe expertise that they couldn't locally, but also labor at different cost bands, because they can, again, access labor nationally, not just in their local market. So I think it's a really positive development for the gig economy. And I don't think we'll ever go back to a workplace that looks as homogenous as it did, in terms of the same way in the same place every day. I think we can now see how unnecessary that is.
Yeah. And just to give some context for people, you advise Fortune 500 companies and consult with startups that are, you know, creating products and services and solutions for this environment. So this is what kind of you're seeing and hearing on a daily and regular basis on, you know, as of in real time.
Absolutely. And I would say in particular, this mandatory work from home has made a really big difference. I mean, I would consult with companies that were hugely reluctant to allow, I mean, they were okay hiring independent workers as long as they came to the office. But they had a real issue and obstacle and mindset resistance to remote work. And I'm really pleased to see that obviously that has had to change, but they really have gotten comfortable with it, which is why I don't think we're going to go back to the way things were.
And how do you think people, let's just say for the employees or contractors, what are some good ways to kind of increase trust and kind of get around and away from the like FaceTime type of work that, and the FaceTime type of stuff that used to happen in the office that, you know, is happening for all of us independently of like, are, you know, am I being micromanaged? Like, is, you know, how do I show that I'm adding value? Things of that nature. How, what have you seen has been from the companies that you're talking to and stuff? Like, what do they think? How can trust be improved between employees and companies to allow for employees and or contractors to be able to then build their portfolios on the side?
That's such an important and fundamental question. And the lack of trust that companies have with their employees is a persistent and meaningful problem in the workplace. The fact that everybody is working remotely has really put the spotlight on that issue. And I think before the pandemic, there was a tendency to believe that if you had people that were working remotely and they weren't performing, that that was a geographical issue, which it's not. It's a management issue. And I think the pandemic has really driven that point home, because it's become clear that many people are productive at home, and that working at home can work just fine. You really don't need FaceTime. You don't need to micromanage people. You don't need to be able to see them sitting in their office chair all day for them to get things done. And also, people get things done in all kinds of ways, at the crack of dawn, in the middle of the night, you know, while dinner's boiling on the stove. It doesn't matter. People can still get their work done. But I think this really has emphasized the change in management mindset that's needed. And one of the big things that I would say the biggest takeaway is that for both companies and employees or independent contractors, is just clear communication around what expectations are. You know, what are the tasks or the assignments or the projects that you are there to perform? And what are the expectations for deliverables, for results, for value from your client or from your employer? And that conversation, which happened far less than it should have when everybody was in the same office, needs to happen now for things to work smoothly and successfully. Everybody needs to be clear what they're doing, what the expectations are. And it's helpful for everybody to be able to focus on results and not on office politics and FaceTime and whether you're sitting in your cube 8 hours a day. It's much better to be able to say, look, I delivered the results you asked for. It doesn't matter how I got there. If they are on time and they're at the quality level that you expect, we're good. What's next? And hopefully, because of the pandemic and the changes in the way we work, we are moving much more rapidly and much more permanently to that kind of conversation than, you know, the sort of micromanaging FaceTime based workplace that we used to have.
How have you been kind of evolving and developing your portfolio career? Obviously, you know, teacher, author, consultant, advisor, you know, how have you been able to find new opportunities, or how do you kind of look for new opportunities? Any thoughts on that would be really helpful.
Yeah, I have found it to be in many ways much more efficient. Nobody's traveling, nobody's doing in-person meetings. So it's been very easy and straightforward to identify, you know, to go to online events or conferences, identify people that I want to talk to, reach out to them, set up a time to talk, right? It's incredibly efficient. So in many ways, it's been much easier to expand my network and find new opportunities. One of the things that I talk about in the book, I have a whole chapter on this, is networking. And many people think of networking and they think of going to those conferences and, you know, entering this huge room of people that you don't know and trying to figure out who to talk to. And everything about that is terrible, from identifying who you should go over and speak to deciding what you want to talk about, and then realizing you didn't really get to meet anybody that you had hoped you would at this event. So all of that, I think, is gone for now. And there are many other effective and impactful ways to expand your network and opportunity set. And one of those is what I call inbound networking, which involves sharing your ideas and letting the people who find those ideas interesting and who resonate with those ideas find you. And what I mean by that is writing articles, writing blog posts, engaging on social media, speaking at a virtual conference, sitting on a panel, asking questions at a virtual event. All of those things allow you to be visible and engaged, even from the comfort of your own home. And it allows you to continue to develop your ideas, put them out into the world, find people who are interested in them, and attract them to you. So there's still a lot of that that we can do effectively and efficiently, you know, from our own homes during a pandemic.
Yeah. Writing a book is a good way.
Exactly. Hey, I walk my own talk.
Yeah, I was going to say, you did a good job inbound marketing in the sense of I was lucky to find your work and have this conversation. So another kind of idea that I have, and I think it's really tied to, you know, kind of taking ownership and taking chances and stuff, is around being kind of one email away from, you know, a new project, a new opportunity. Can you speak to maybe an example of like a random email, serendipitous moment, something that just happened that kind of changed your trajectory a little bit? Anything come to mind there?
I guess one example that I would point to is, and I've heard this a couple of times, which is why I think it's an interesting example. I can think of a few people that I've interviewed as part of my work on the gig economy who work independently, and they have adopted a practice of putting their ideas out into the world. So they've either become a contributor to an industry publication or a more widely known publication like Forbes or Inc. or something like that. Or they've written their own book, but they've somehow figured out a way to put their ideas out into the world. And I do know that, you know, they have gotten life-changing emails from that. Like one, I can think of two people actually who were invited to do a TEDx talk as a result of somebody who read what they had written. And then that TEDx talk opened up a whole new set of opportunities. I have a few friends in the writing community who have written a post or an article that has become popular. It not necessarily gone viral, but it's been popular. And they have had an agent call them and say, hey, you know, this article was really amazing. It's getting a lot of attention. We notice you do work in this area. Have you ever thought about writing a book in this space? So I think those are two examples that I can give you from people that I've interviewed that have had life-changing or career-changing emails from, you know, work that they've done.
Wow.
And that have been inbound emails.
Yeah, that's powerful. hopefully it happens to the listener that's out there sooner than later.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you think that we kind of missed that's in the book? I mean, obviously there's 10 different, you know, main lessons and principles and, you know, and the class that you teach and the work that you do. Is there anything else that you think that really stands out for somebody that's, you know, trying to take ownership of their portfolio career in this time? Anything, you know, some small micro action or just something else that you think that we missed, Diane?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to leave your audience with something really concrete. One of the common questions that I get is, if I'm working in a full-time job, how can I begin to make the transition to working independently? And I would offer three concrete steps. The first is, and we talked about this earlier, but we were talking about companies in terms of changing their mindset to allow people to get comfortable with people working remotely. And I would say the first step for any individual is to change your mindset and get out of this employee mindset where where you believe that somebody has to give you a job and give you a paycheck, and that that comes with it a sense of security and stability. We've all seen very clearly there's no job security in our economy, but it takes people a while to just get comfortable with the idea of working differently. In my book, I have a bunch of exercises to help you get through that. But I think that's the first step, is to start working on your own mindset and getting comfortable with the idea that your career might not look like a series of full-time jobs, and you could be working for yourself and creating a portfolio of work. So that would be step one. Step number two would be to, for whatever your current situation is, develop an exit strategy. And I'll tell you quickly what I mean by that. The assignment that I give my students is to imagine that your boss comes in and says, in 6 months, I'm going to lay you off from this job. If your boss came in and did that today, what would you then do? How would you prepare for that event 6 months from now? What would you do professionally? What would you do financially? How would you think about your learning and skills? What would you do personally to prepare for that, cutting spending, you know, looking for new opportunities, all of those things? Make a list of all those things and start executing them. It will help you get into the mindset of change, and it will help you prepare for what's next and to feel in control of that. So that's step number two. Step number three is always have a side gig. And it doesn't matter if it's something that earns money right up front. Take that pressure off. It can be as easy as working for a nonprofit, volunteering, mentoring. The idea is to start doing something on the side that improves your skills, expands your networks, and opens up new opportunities. But make it a practice to always be doing something in addition to your full-time gig. And it allows you to experiment. It's a very low-cost, low-risk way to try out different ideas that you have before you make the leap. So those are the three things I would recommend: change your mindset, create an exit strategy, and always have a side gig.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Diane. And for people that want to send you inbound opportunities and connect with you in different places, what would be the best way, Diane?
The best way is on my website, which is dianemulcahy.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Diane.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, friend, thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.